It is officially Dallas Week here on the Eagle Eye Podcast, presented by Nissan with Ruben Frank. I'm Dave Zangaro. Ruben, those two words, Dallas Week, it's exciting.
Yeah, when it's kind of a cliche, you know, you always joke about it, but when the Eagles and Cowboys play throughout the records, I mean, anything can happen and will happen. So it's not a lot of division games early in the season, but this one's going to be a really, really interesting game.
Yeah, and kind of a rare Monday night game in Dallas. The last few years, it's been a Sunday night game, so it gives us an extra day to talk about it, which will be fun.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
But we're keeping the same podcast schedule, as you see. We're recording on the same days. So we'll get into more of the game-specific stuff on Thursday, looking ahead to Monday. But we have plenty to talk about today. We're going to start off with the injuries to Brandon Graham and Brandon Brooks, what that means for the Eagles. We'll talk a little bit about Zach Ertz being on the COVID-19 list, what that means for the team. Some thoughts on the defense so far, that they've been the stronger unit of the two. And then we have a bunch of listener questions to get to. We haven't done that in a while, so we want to make sure we answer your questions. But Rube, let's start with Brandon Graham and Brandon Brooks, the two Brandons. It makes it tough to differentiate sometimes when we're talking about them, but the bad news here, Brandon Graham out for the season, the torn Achilles. The good news, relatively good news, Brandon Brooks, it's just a strain of his pec. It's not a tear, so he doesn't need surgery. It looks like he'll be back sometime this season.
The good news is Brandon Brooks will be back at some point, but you really do have to wonder with his recent injury history, how long he'll be back and at what level he'll play. And just exactly what his future is. And I mean, I love the guy. I love the way he plays. He's been a great Eagle for quite a while now, but he's an older guy and it's been a lot. It's been a lot of injuries. So it's fair to wonder about his future.
Yeah. And they've been kind of strange injuries though. It hasn't been like, you know, you think of like the injury prone guys, we tend to think about her like soft tissue all the time. His have been, you know, he had that, the weird shoulder a few years ago, the Achilles twice, two different Achilles. Yeah. So I don't know what to make of it. I still think he's clearly a better option than anyone else they have. And that's maybe by the end of this stretch, we won't be saying that. Maybe Landon Dickerson really improves and he looks like a first round talent. But you still think they'd really like to have Brandon Brooks out there if they're going to make a run at this division this year. But let's go through that position first, and then we'll flip to defense and how the Eagles kind of deal with it. Is it just as easy to land Dickerson's the right guard? Because I think it is.
Yeah, I think at this point, and I think that there was certainly a case to be made that Nate Herbig could have been the guy on Sunday against the 49ers, only because, you know, Dickerson didn't have training camp. He hasn't played. He didn't play in the preseason. He just was activated onto the roster. He just started practicing again. He had never played in a game and he hadn't practiced next to Lane. Nate Herbig is a guy who, look, talent wise, Nate Herbig is here and Landon Dickerson is here, even a Landon Dick, but so much of playing O-line is chemistry with the guys next to you. And Nate Herbig has that. He started games last year. He's played a lot and he's a solid guy. So you could make a case. Look, Stout knows certainly better than I do who's going to give him the best chance on game day, but you could make a case that Nate Herbig could have been the guy to come in the middle of a game if there was an injury at one of the guard spots. But Landon Dixon will have this week to practice. He'll get a lot of reps. He'll get all the reps with, I would presume, with Lane, and, you know, next to Lane and next to Kelsey. And by Monday night, he's got to be the guy. So I think if it was going to be one or the other, it would have been Nate to come in the middle of a game when Landon hadn't gotten reps and didn't have the experience, had never played on this level. But at this point, there's no reason to not go with Landon Dickerson.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we saw it actually was a blessing in a weird way that Brooks has been dealing with a knee injury, because he didn't practice a ton this week leading into the game, which gave Dickerson some first team reps. So at least he didn't go out there with no reps next to Lane Johnson. And you're right, he'll get all the first team. We're assuming Nick Sirianni didn't want to name him the starter, but that's kind of his MO. So I think it's probably fair to assume that you just drafted this guy in the second round. He's a first round talent. He was your backup in this game. He's going to be the guy. I went back and I watched Dickerson.
Yeah.
And it wasn't great. It was a rough first start for him, or a rough beginning, not a start. He had 20 pass blocking snaps, gave up 5 pressures. There's a lot of room to improve, but I did see some good. And it's such a tough position for him to be thrown in without all of training camp, with really a couple weeks of practice reps in general, a couple days next to Lane Johnson. And then he has to go in cold in the second quarter. That's a tough ask. And I actually thought he battled pretty well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I do think it was a warm day. I wonder about his conditioning. They're running a lot of tempo. He hasn't played since December, since the SEC championship game. So I think that could have been an issue. That's not easy to do. Big guy. You know, he missed a lot of work. He missed a lot of time. So I'm sure his conditioning is not where he would want it to be, especially running this offense. So you can't, you know, your technique is not going to be what it should be when you're gassed. And, you know, that's always an issue with a guy who hasn't practiced a whole lot.
Yeah. And even if Herbig is slightly better now, and you can make that case based on his experience, he's not enough above Dickerson, if he is at all, to make the case to play him, because the Eagles have made this clear that they're going to compete this year, but this year's really about development, about looking toward the future. And Dickerson is a guy they hope is a cornerstone piece of this team for the next decade. So if you have a chance to get him some playing time, you're going to do it. And I'd expect we're going to see him get better over the course of however long he needs to start, whether it's a few weeks, a month, 2 months, whatever it is. I think we're going to see some great improvement from him, because just from a physical standpoint, I mean, he's a superior athlete to a lot of guys in the NFL. I don't want to just point out Herbig here. I mean, we're talking about this guy who's 6'6", 330, who moves. He's the old dancing bear. I mean, that's Landon Dickerson.
Yeah, absolutely. And I it'll be interesting, maybe not, because I would expect him to improve with each week. Say he plays 6 weeks, and by the second month, he's playing at a really high level. Brandon Brooks comes back. You know, you're thinking of the future, or you're thinking of the present. I would think Brandon Brooks is going to get his job back, but if Dickerson's playing at a really high level, it's an interesting question.
Yeah, the Eagles would take that. That, you know, they always say a good problem, and I always say a good problem is still a problem. They would take that one if their future piece looks really good. But another part of this is it's going to help their evaluation about where Landon Dickerson fits next year, because they don't really know yet. They've given him some snaps at center, at guard. His first few practices, he was snapping the ball. He was snapping the ball even recently. So this could give them a sense. You know, if he really looks good at guard, then that's probably his position next year. You know, and whether it's left or right, they can move Isaac inside to take over Kelsey's spot if Kelsey's gone. But it's going to give them a better idea of his long-term fit, I think.
I keep thinking about, like, if Kelsey was going to retire, I feel like it would have been this year. New coach, new scheme, you know, everything, you know, new quarterback, just a new start. It's got to be hard at 33 to kind of gird yourself for that. So I'm not going into this year thinking he's definitely retiring after this year. I feel like it was more likely last year. Well, I mean, there might be a new coach again next year. We don't know, but I kind of doubt it. You know, he seems to like Nick, and we know how he feels about Stout. So it'll be interesting. And Stout spoke so highly about Isaac this week. You know, it certainly doesn't sound like they're about to bench him for Landon. So it's a really interesting dynamic. I think one of our questions when we did our predictions was how many games Landon Dickerson would start. You know, you feel like he's going to be somewhere, and here he is. We just don't know how for long, but or how long it'll be for. But it's certainly going to be intriguing to see how that improvement goes at right guard.
Yeah, and how he plays with Lane, because there's a chance that could end up being his spot right guard.
Yeah,
the Eagles weren't shy about trying to trade Brandon in the offseason. Now he's hurt again. This could be his last year here. So it's going to be fun to watch Dickerson over the next month or whatever it is, because there's no question there's talent. And we talked about the pick when they made it and just how much risk there is involved. It's a high risk, high reward pick, because talent wise, first rounder, no doubt. All pro potential. I mean, really, like really, really good player, but the injury history scares you. And I don't know if that's something he'll be able to. It's funny, we talk about Brooks being injury prone. I mean, Landon Dickerson's had more injuries in college than Brandon Brooks has had in the NFL. So we'll see how it goes. But talent wise, this can be fun to watch Dickerson for sure.
Yeah, if I had to guess, I would guess that this is Brandon Brooks' last year with the Eagles. I think that's fair to think. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Kelce, you mentioned he might come back, but they need to rework the contract, because that contract's basically a 1-year deal for this year. It's basically like a there's a mechanism in there that makes it the final year unless they redo something. So. It's fascinating. And the O-line is always fascinating because of Jeff Stoutland and what he's got brewing. But let's flip to defense. Brandon Graham, who I'd argue is, even though they're pretty deep on the D-line, there's no sugarcoating how big of a loss this is. And people are going to talk a lot about Brandon Graham's leadership, and they should, because he's become a phenomenal leader, emotional leader. And that's a big deal. He's the guy who leads them in their huddles before and after games, and that's an important role. But let's not lose sight of the fact that this guy's still a really good player. He's still their best edge rusher. He's gotten better with age somehow, and they're going to miss him on the field.
Might be their best defensive player. You can make a case for that. Yeah, it's a huge loss. And, you know, we keep waiting for some of the other guys to kind of supplant him as the best pass rusher, but he is it. And his value can't be understated. It was like a punch in the gut to the whole team when he hobbled off the field. You know, they ended up giving up a touchdown on that drive, and I don't want to make excuses. Niners might've gone down and scored anyway. But you could see the effect it had on that team. I mean, this is a guy who hasn't missed a game with an injury in 10 years. We just think of him as being indestructible. And it was hard for everybody to see, for the fans, for us. I mean, just because we've known him for so long, we understand how much he loves being out there playing and the joy he brings to the game, that he brings to the team. That was a tough one. That was a tough one to see. And John Clark caught up with him, I guess, yesterday, Tuesday. Well, Monday. I don't know what day it is. Today's Tuesday, Monday. And, you know, he was typically upbeat and positive, talked about getting ready and coming back, being ready for OTAs, which, you know, I would never bet against Brandon Graham, but I hope he does play again. That's not the way you want to go out. But as far as this year, it's a huge loss. And it's a huge loss for Nick, because I feel like BG was almost like he was like Nick's right-hand man. They shared that same boundless energy, and BG really speaks well of Nick. And anytime one of those veterans brings that, it's instant credibility for a new coach. And they still have veterans and guys that can fill that role. But BG is such a natural leader. Like Fletcher Cox is not. He just doesn't have, he's just a different personality. It's not a right or wrong. He's not as vocal. I mean, nobody's as vocal as BG. Like, I don't know if I've ever met anyone as vocal. I think as Alex Singleton said, you know, what's going to change? He said, well, it'll be a lot quieter between plays because he won't be talking trash to the other team every snap. It's tough to replace that. And it's impossible to replace that. You might get a guy who can get a bunch of sacks, but he brings so much. And they could sure use that, but he just brings so much to this franchise. He's the kind of guy that you could ask anybody in the accounting department, you know, cafeteria worker, anybody in that building, and they'll tell you a story about BG and what a great guy he is. So you just don't replace that.
Yeah, it was tough. And then when the injury happened, you know, I get my binoculars out and I'm peering down the field just to see, you know, who was it? How serious is it? And when I realized it was Brandon, then the second I realized it was Brandon, I saw Fletcher just turn away and yell something. You're like, I mean, that's never good. And anytime there's a suspected Achilles injury, it's an Achilles injury. It's a pretty easy one to diagnose. So, yeah they're going to miss him. What do you think the plan is going forward? Because typically, at least what we saw in training camp and in the first 2 weeks of the season, you had Derek Barnett and Josh Sweat on the right side of the defensive line, and then Brandon Graham and Ryan Kerrigan on the left. Is this as easy as Kerrigan's now the starter and they'll have to figure it out from there? Or do you think they try to get either Sweat or Barnett, whoever isn't starting on the right side, to become the starter on the left?
Yeah, I think that's what they should try for two reasons. The future, those guys should be better at this point than Ryan Kerrigan. Ryan Kerrigan didn't show me a whole lot in his limited playing time Sunday. And, you know, he didn't have a training camp. And I think if your two best pass rushers.
He had a couple good rushes on Sunday that I remember.
Yeah, I think his first snap actually was okay, but I just didn't see a whole lot after that. If your two best rushers have to be Sweat and Barnett, I mean, they have to be. One guy was a 14th pick. The other guy just gave a $40 million contract to. So, Ryan Kerrigan is an older, how old's Kerrigan now? 34, something like that. I mean, I think he's got to be a rotational guy. The fact that he played more snaps than Sweat Sunday irritates me. Like you said, this year needs to be about young guys playing. And Ryan Kerrigan should be going in there and giving you 20 snaps and giving you what he has. Maybe Teron Jackson can get in the mix for 10 snaps, see if he can do anything. It's a lot to ask for a late-round rookie, but there just aren't a lot of options. I mean, it's a position where they have bodies but not depth. I would think Barnett on the left side, Sweat on the right side, and then Kerrigan the next man in. I just think you have to start that way.
That's what I would do too. And I think you're right about moving Barnett. I think he's played on the other side a little bit more than Sweat, and he did in that game too. So it kind of tells you where they might be leaning. They're like, what about Milton Williams, a guy who they put a bunch on his plate as a rookie in training camp, but maybe that'll pay off because he repped a ton. He repped more at end than he did at tackle, and that's kind of flipped once we've gotten to games. But now that they need him, I don't think that's crazy to have him play on the edge more.
Yeah, that's true. Like you said, it's a lot to ask. I think he's played okay. You know, we haven't really seen him flash. He's been solid, I think.
He's made some good plays, though. He's made some plays that have gone under the radar, I think.
Okay, that's
fair. He's made some good plays inside, and some of those plays don't show. And then I've seen him like hustle a lot too. Like he's made some plays. I think he blew up a screen in the last game. So he's making some plays. He hasn't flashed as a pure pass rusher yet.
Right. And I don't know if he will. I don't know if that's really his,
I think he will.
Well, we'll see. I think his game is power and hustle and strength. We'll see. I don't think he's a natural defensive end. He's just, I think he'll get sacks just on sheer will and strength and power and determination. You know, I'm not sure he has moves like as a, you know, defensive end moves, but I want to see more of him. Certainly. I do think he's pretty solid, and yeah, he played a lot. He played more than Sweat did Sunday, I think. I mean, he got 31 reps.
Yeah. Well, he plays two positions. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's going to be something Monday night. That's going to be, you know, really well. I mean, we'll talk to Gannon Wednesday. Maybe get some sense of how it's all going to break down. But I don't think we'll really know till Monday night.
I mean, Gannon, as much as this team has talked about competitive advantage and how much they've held close to them, something tells me we're not going to get a whole heck of a lot from Gannon about his personnel usage at end.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. So I think we'll, you know, we'll have a good idea at 1 a.m. on Tuesday morning. What the plan is. But I know one thing, they got to get some pass rusher. I mean, their defensive ends don't have a sack this year, and now they just lost their best one. So that's a challenge. And, you know, thinking long-term, I mean, it's an area that they're going to have to address, because Ryan Kerrigan's not here beyond this year. I think ultimately Milton Williams, he might be a swing guy, but I still think he's a defensive tackle long-term. So it's something they're going to have to think about. Hey, score big with the AAA Eagles membership, along with superb roadside assistance and discounts that you've come to expect from AAA. Get exclusive Eagles-related perks. For details, visit AAA.com/Eagles.
All right, Ruben, we know the Eagles won't have Brandon Graham, Brandon Brooks on Monday night. They might not have Zach Ertz. He was put on the reserve COVID-19 list. There's a chance he could be back and a chance he won't be back. Explain this to me, because you and I went back and forth yesterday making sure we had everything lined up, and we figured out everything you need to know.
Yeah, read my story. It's all explained in there. Now, basically, Ertz is vaccinated. NFL players that are vaccinated, even if they test positive, they can come back after two negative tests, PCR tests, 24 hours apart, and also being asymptomatic for 48 hours. So, there's a chance that he can do it. If you're not vaccinated, it's a minimum of 10 days. You're out. You're basically out no matter what, whether you have symptoms, whether you it doesn't matter. You're out for 10 days. And if you are now, if you're a close contact, and you're vaccinated, you don't go on the COVID list. You don't have to quarantine. If you're unvaccinated and you're a close contact, it's 5 days, quarantine. And with no symptoms. So the league is really doing everything it can to, and I think the rate is really high. The vaccination rate's really high to keep this thing, to keep the game as safe as possible. It's really remarkable. I mean, Ertz, you would think if he played Sunday and tested positive Monday, he was probably contagious on Sunday, possibly. We're speculating, you don't know, but you're basically contagious before you test positive, which makes it so difficult to diagnose. The fact that nobody else tested positive is a really encouraging sign that the protocols they're using are working. And, because you see so many teams, one guy tests positive, now you have seven, or, you know, you have coaches, trainers. So, number one, we wish Zach's okay. You hope he's okay. And he's back soon, but he does have a chance to get back for Dallas, especially with a longer week. It gives him an extra day. Although I guess he's got to be negative by Sunday so he can get on the plane. And we'll see what happens. And, you have Goddard and Jack Stahl, and then, that's it. So, we'll see how it goes. I got a kid on the practice squad and, who was not here in training camp, a new guy. So that's,
Eubanks,
Tyree Jackson,
right?
Eubanks. Yeah. Tyree Jackson still at least a month away from, even thinking about coming off IR. So that's where they are.
Yeah. And my Twitter mentions were a dumpster fire yesterday. And the point here is that whatever you think about the vaccine, the NFL has clear rules here and they favor those who are vaccinated. So if Zach Ertz was unvaccinated right now, he'd be missing Dallas Cowboys Monday Night Football, which is why it's such a big deal around the league when certain players, not to mention any names, are unvaccinated, because if you test positive, you're unvaccinated, you're missing a football game. And that's the bottom line.
Much greater risk of getting really sick. I mean, so that's, whatever you think, whatever your politics are, that's just reality. I mean, nobody who's vaccinated, not nobody, but very, I mean, it's like 0.01% of vaccinated people that get COVID are dying. And very, very small amount are going to the hospital. So if you're vaccinated, you can still get it. There's breakthrough cases, and there's a good number of them, but you're a lot safer if you're vaccinated. If you want to block me, block me.
Yeah, it's can say whatever. Yeah, I don't care.
Science.
Yeah, I get it. I just want to make it clear that even from a football perspective, if all you care about is football, it's pretty cut and dry there. It's
right.
It's what the NFL wants, and whether or not it's right or wrong, it's there. It is. Them's the rules. All right. The Eagles' defense overall been pretty good through two games. They didn't do enough, I guess you can say, on Sunday because they lost that game, but 17 points is still not a lot of points. 23 points given up in the first 2 weeks of the season. This unit looks pretty good, Ruben.
Yeah, it's the second fewest in the last 40 years. 2005 allowed 17 the first two games, and that year started out great until T.O. kind of, sabotage the whole thing, and then Donovan got hurt. But anyway, it's interesting. I wrote a piece for Wednesday mornings for the site. I almost said Wednesday morning's paper. It's interesting. Like, I don't think the defense played great on Sunday against the Niners. They still don't have a takeaway. They didn't have any sacks in that game. They're not making big plays, but they're playing fine. And 23 points, you can't argue with that. If you hold a team to 17 points, you should win that game. And I think if they can start getting takeaways and sacks and making big plays on top of just how solid the coverage has been, I think it's been really good for the most part. The only team in the league, it's only allowed one play of 20 yards or more. And it was obviously a damaging play, led to that touchdown just before halftime. But, you're going to give up plays. And they had to play 35 minutes Sunday against Jimmy Garoppolo, who is a professional quarterback, and he's a good player. And playing 35 minutes and giving up 17 points, that's like Billy Davis. That's what he had to do every week. And not coincidentally, the last time the Eagles played 35 minutes on defense and allowed 17 or fewer points was 2013. Chip and Billy's first year here. So I think giving up six in Atlanta and giving up 17 to the Niners is a good start. They need takeaways, and they need sacks. They need those big plays. They need, how many balls do they have in their hands that could have been INTs on Sunday? I think three. They need their Fletcher Cox and Darius Slay. They need their best players to make plays and not to get close. Because I think if they can make those plays, then they have a chance to be a really, really good defense. I'm not sure what they are now. I think they're solid at worst. And I think Gannon's a good coach, but got to make plays at some point, or teams are going to take advantage. I mean, we talked about complimentary football. Darius Slay, and then that was probably a bad call. I mean, he brings the ball back down to the 25 or 30, and you're thinking the defense finally made a play and helped the offense. So far, the two haven't helped each other, and that's what this team needs.
Yeah, that play was weird in general.
Because we had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, I was begging Fox to give us a replay on that one. What'd you make of it, by the way? Because it's a tough one to figure out, because it's – The runner clearly goes with his head forward too, but based on what we've seen in the NFL, that's a penalty, but they're not going to call it. It looked like he got a forearm to the helmet from Anthony Harris first, which to me, that could have been a penalty.
Yeah.
And then Kayvon Diddley with his helmet.
Yeah.
As much as the other guy led with his helmet, it was a tough play. I was a little surprised they called it the way they did, but I don't know what to make of it overall.
Yeah, I think it's almost impossible, because you guys are moving. It's like, it's one thing if a guy's being held up, he's not moving, and you're going with your head. But if a guy's moving and he's falling, he's going down.
And his direction changed once he got hit. by Harris. So if his direction didn't change, his trajectory didn't change, Kayvon wouldn't have hit him in the helmet.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. And you have a moving target, and the target is moving. And, unless you're like, we used to be allowed on the field the last couple of minutes of every game. We're allowed on to watch at the end on the field. And until you're that close, you don't realize just how fast the game is played. And Kayvon Wallace doesn't have time to sit there and think, oh, he's moving this way and now this way, so I'm going to come. I mean, you don't have time to do that. I didn't think it was a great call. If anything, offsetting, leading with the helmets, which would have taken away the turnover as well. The bottom line is, and he can't go on social media whining about it either, even if it's a terrible call, because that's how you get that call again. That's when the ref's like, oh, he's going to call out the refs. We're going to just keep calling everything on him.
Yeah, that'll get you called into the principal's office at the NovaCare Complex.
That's right. And, Derek Barnett has a reputation now, and you don't want to get into that position where you're the guy with the reputation.
Yeah. The other one, and this is off topic now, but the one that went in the Eagles' favor, Jalen Hurts running down the sideline, he takes a step out and then takes a hit. That's a really tough one for the defensive back to lay up on.
Yeah. Right. Because you don't know when he's going out of bounds.
Yeah. He goes out of bounds right in front of you. If he pulls a stutter move there, and you don't tackle and you look like an idiot.
Right.
That's a tough one, man.
Yeah, it really is. That was borderline. Yeah, no doubt about it. It was a big 15 yards on top of a 27-yard run.
Well, within the rules, clearly it's a penalty, but it's like, how's that? What's that guy supposed to do? Take his foot off the gas when the guy's on, running down the sideline? Man, that was tough. All right, defense, now that we're off topic. But, yeah, they need turnovers. They need takeaways. And they've been close. You're right. The Darius Slay one comes to mind. Anthony Harris has had a couple in his hands. Even the pitch where Derek Barnett got that stupid penalty, that ball's rolling around. It's like, he then just rolls out of bounds. Not that
Steve Nelson had one. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how he didn't come up with it.
And it's just funny because of how much Gannon stressed forcing turnovers in training camp. And there have been a few that they've gotten on the ground or a few they've had in their hands as interceptions possibly, and they haven't come up with them.
And this has been a problem. It's weird because this is a problem the last couple of years. I think the Eagles have had 11, 10, and 11 interceptions the last 3 years, which is crazy. I think they're the fifth team to have 11 or fewer three straight years. And you would think with a new coordinator, new players, new scheme, it's the same problem. This is only the third time ever they don't have an interception or a takeaway through two games. It also happened in 96 and 98, both years under Ray Rhodes, their last defensive head coach. So I'm not sure what that means, but they got to get them. They're already last in the league in takeaways. Obviously, you can't not be last when you don't have any.
Yeah, but they also haven't turned the ball over, which is – very rare. And we talked about it on the last pod.
Yeah. Yeah.
Insane.
Would you rather have a few of each or none of each?
I guess none of each.
Probably.
Yeah. In general, they each vary, but I guess none of each. I'd rather not turn the ball over on offense if you had to choose
that. All right.
But I don't know. That's strange.
Yeah. I don't, there's no answer. It's okay. A stupid question. I withdraw the question.
And that's a good segue into our chance to finally answer some questions from listeners. So I have the list in front of me. Want me to read these, Rube?
Yeah, what do you got?
Okay. This one is from Douglas Murrell. Is it possible the defensive line could be even better without Graham?
No.
Yeah, I don't know what you're going for there. Maybe he's thinking it'll give more opportunity for guys like Josh Sweat and Milton Williams, but no, he's their best edge player. They're going to miss him.
Yeah. And I guess the question is, do you feel like he's not the player he was? And I don't feel that way. I mean, I think at 33, he was playing as well as he has. He's been playing really well.
All right, this next one is from our buddy J.P. Finley from ABC Sports Washington. And you know what? I think him and B. Mitch were tossing this around on the radio show today. Who's the second best quarterback in the NFC East? And the two Washington guys, you can kind of see where they might be thinking there. All right, who's the second best quarterback in the NFC East?
Flacco. No, maybe Minshew, one or the other. I guess the thinking is that Dak's number one, and where's Taylor Heinicke?
That's pretty fair.
I mean, Taylor Heinicke has looked okay. He just hasn't played that much. It's certainly not Daniel Jones.
How would you rank those three between Hurts, Heinicke, and Jones right now?
I just haven't seen enough of Taylor Heinicke, but I'd probably rate him. I mean, Daniel Jones coming off an okay game.
Daniel Jones makes plays. He's just not consistent.
His only problem is the turnovers, and he didn't have any when he doesn't have turnovers. But I mean, that's probably true for every quarterback. I don't know. You go first. I don't know. It's hard to really know what Taylor Heinicke is. I mean,
yeah, it's tough. When Fitz is healthy, I think he's the second best right now.
Yeah,
in the division. But without him, I'd go Hurts second.
I'd probably go Jones then Taylor Heinicke for now. Yeah.
Yeah, I might go Heinicke ahead of Jones, but either way. But I think Hurts is, to me, clearly the second best quarterback in the division right now, ahead of Heinicke and ahead of Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I would agree.
And that's not even like – it's a low bar. It's not like that's a ton of praise for Jalen Hurts. But and Dak is, you know, Dak can't even see these guys from where he's sitting right now. But
healthy Dak's pretty good.
Yeah, he is. All right, next one. Can you please help to put this arm strength issue to bed? I know Hurts doesn't have an Allen or Mahomes arm, but please let the haters know his arm is plenty strong for the league. What do you think about Jalen Hurts' arm?
Yeah, I think we saw that. I mean, you look at the Deshaun play from last year. The last 5 weeks of last season, he had the second most 30-yard completions in the league behind Tom Brady. And he didn't even play half of two of those five games. I think he underthrew some the other day just because I don't think his mechanics were great, but he's got an NFL arm. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the Quez play, you can see it. He can throw the ball a long way, and he can fire it. That's not my concern with it. I'm not concerned. He's definitely got an NFL arm.
Yeah, he does. I mean, if there's any concern about his arm strength, it looks like later in games a little bit, it might tail off a tad, which is something to watch. It's not necessarily even a concern yet. It's something that I noticed, and that's without me really putting a long look into it. What I will say is we have seen those issues on his deep ball. I don't think those were arm strength issues. You're right. I think sometimes what we've seen from him is he struggles to throw with anticipation. The ball should have been out of his hand earlier on two of those throws in particular. And the one deep ball, it looked like his footwork was off. He took like a weird half step into the throw. We never got his feet settled under him. So I think there were issues with those balls being underthrown. I don't think it was necessarily his arm. I do think that throwing with anticipation is a big deal with him. And it might seem unfair to point out two plays in a game when he's playing, 65 or whatever it was, but 55 in that game, I think. But those are two big plays. Like the one to Devontae Smith, that ball has to be out of his hand sooner. That's a touchdown. So, we're agreeing here that I think his arm's strong enough, but there are other issues that have gotten in the way of him showing his arm strength.
So you think Nick has to go to the bullpen earlier now? Like you think he's like a 7-inning quarterback?
Bring in Minshew as the closer?
No, I think Flacco is the setup guy and then Minshew is the closer. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, Minshew, you need a quirky closer.
Yeah.
It's like
the Al Roboski of the Turk Wendell. Yeah. Al Roboski the Jesse Orosco of, Big Lee Smith.
Was it Turk Wendell who used to brush his teeth in between innings? I think so. I think I remember him like he'd have they'd show the camera in the dugout or in the bullpen rather, and he'd have a toothbrush hanging out of his mouth. Strange guy.
Yeah, who's your favorite closer of all time?
Probably Brad Ledge. That was in my wheelhouse. I was in college when he went on that run. So
perfect year. I always loved Lee Smith, man. He had one pitch. he had one pitch and he would just like go after you with that 100 mile an hour. That was like before, you know, like 100 mile an hour fastballs, like everybody has them now. But man, I loved it. And most closers, like other than like Mariano and Lee Smith, like closers have like one great year and then like two bad years, they're hurt, maybe another good year for another team, and then they're out of the league. To have that staying power like Lee Smith and Rivera is that's
remember when Eric Gagne went on that run where it was just lights out and then he had arm problems. And
yeah, we were actually that one World Series game that Mariano blew. We were at Sky Harbor Airport. The Eagles played the Cards that day, and we were all getting ready for our red eye watching the World Series in, you know, Arizona, in some bar with all these crazy Arizona people. And when Mariano blew that save. Anyway, we're a little off topic.
Yeah, speaking of closers, people are closing this podcast in their browsers. All right, next one up from Kurt. I don't think anyone can replace what BG brings, but do you think they do a trade or bring in a free agent? If so, who do you think they look at?
It's just so tough because, you know, anybody that's out there, like teams aren't training anyone good right now. I mean, because every team is in the hunt, they're in the race. And for anybody who's on the street, there's a reason they're on the street. Now, maybe there's a practice squad guy somewhere that they like. But to really think that you can get help at this point without giving anything up of note, which they don't want to do, for a fourth defensive end or maybe a third defensive end, I just don't see it. I think they're going to have to go with what they have. I'd be really surprised. And maybe there's a practice squad guy out there they could sign that they like, that they, you know, they liked in training camp, but I think most likely they'll go with what they have.
Yeah. I mean, they have a defensive tackle on their practice squad they like, so I could see maybe they bring him up at some point and they make Milton Williams an end. But to me, the Ryan Kerrigan signing is like a preemptive trade deadline move for an edge rusher, right? Like they did it already. They already had that guy
right
in house. Whether or not he's going to live up to it or not, we'll see. But I feel like that move would have been the move in season, like a guy like that. And then you'd have to give up a draft pick for it. They're not giving up any, I would hope not. They're not giving up any significant draft picks to bring in anyone
right,
you know, for this season, because they've been pretty clear about this. They're competing this year, but it's about the future. So, and it's about how many draft picks they have next year. Now, look, if they have to give up a sixth round pick, maybe, you know, how we can find a sixth round pick walking to get a cup of coffee in the morning. So that wouldn't be awful, but any pick of substance, it's hard to imagine they would do that.
Agree. Yeah.
Okay. The next one is from Eric Barker. I hope this is a question about Frisbee Dogs. Setting aside the subsequent positional organizational implications, that's a bad joke. Have we seen enough to justify Hurts at number 53 overall, just from a talent assessment perspectives? A lot of voices said that was a reach.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I tend to think yes. It's kind of no man's land to take a quarterback there. You know, it's really, you know, if you're not finding your quarterback in the first 10 picks of the draft, it's really rare that you're going to hit on a franchise guy after that. It does happen. Dak is an example of that. Russell Wilson is an example of that. But I think so, because I think, you know, in the second round, what are you looking for? I mean, this is a guy, he's going to have a long career, you know, whether he's a full-time franchise starter for this team, he's going to be in the league in 10 years, 8 years. You know? So, a backup quarterback, if that's what he ends up being, a guy that's a part-time starter or a good backup, he'll be in the league. So I tend to think there's second round value there. Yes. At worst. Yes.
Yeah. And it's tricky because there are so many layers to the Hurts pick, and putting aside the previous quarterback in that whole situation, the Eagles drafted him to be a backup quarterback. And I think through six starts, he's clearly proven that's his floor to me.
Yeah.
You know, he's a, his floor is a pretty good backup. So if that's all they ever thought of him, or that's like, that was what they viewed him as, then yeah, sure. I mean, talent wise, he's proven to be at the very least an adequate backup and with a lot of plus side of being a starter. So yeah, I think that's fair. Worth the pick. At least if that's the lens you're looking at it through. Now, if the lens is you already have a franchise quarterback and you want to help them, probably not, but different that's a story for a different day.
Yeah, that hopefully we never have to talk about it.
We might have to mention him, by the way.
No.
We'll talk about him at the end of the podcast.
Okay.
Spencer Villarreal. Do you feel this is the first big test for Gannon's defense Monday night, or is San Fran a good enough test to know where they stand?
Yeah, I think you know, I don't know where they stand. I don't know what they are. It's interesting. You look at the next like 6 weeks and they're facing four top 10 offenses, and this is not one of them. I mean, the Bucs, the Chiefs, the Raiders, who are putting up a lot of points, although I think Derek Carr might be hurt. And the Chargers, I mean, they're facing some really good offenses, but I think a week from Sunday is going to really give us, I mean, Mr. Mahomes is coming to town. So yeah, I mean, obviously Monday night's going to be a test in a way, but you know, I don't think we'll really know what this defense is until, you know, really until 6 or 8 weeks in. And you would hope they'd get better from there. Schedule gets better, but they've got some, I mean, gosh, Brady, they're facing Mahomes and Brady. It might be the two best quarterbacks ever by the time all is said and done. Although Joe might disagree with that.
Joe Flacco.
Joe. There's only one Joe. And but it's Monday night at AT&T Stadium. And Dak is healthy, so it's going to be a challenge, but probably not the biggest one that they're going to face over the next month or 6 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as the first test, I think you're right, there are bigger ones coming. 49ers are a pretty good test, because that's not an easy offense for a young defense.
True.
To go against. They do a lot.
They're such a different type.
They're offense. Very different. They do a lot to throw you off. So I was impressed by the way they handled that with their young players. They didn't bite on a lot of that crap that Shanahan throws at you. So I you know what I mean? All that eye candy stuff that it's designed to get you in the wrong spot. But for the most part, they handled that pretty well. So I've been very encouraged by their defense, but I agree with you that the tougher tests are coming.
Yeah.
All right. Dylan Florig, did a lack of preseason game action and full contact practice potentially impact the goal line execution Sunday? Whole offense looked out of sync on those plays.
I think it was just bad plays. I mean, I think that would have shown up in Atlanta. It's not like they would have been crisp on offense in Atlanta, and then a week later, all of a sudden, that's showing up. I think the preseason plan worked. They're healthy for the most part. I mean, it's a bad day to say that, but you know, I think we saw that this kind of training camp can work and prepare a team to be physical and crisp and sharp. I just think those were bad plays, especially the. I don't even know what to call that fourth down play, the Greg Ward special, the Houston special. We'll call it the Houston special.
I heard someone call it, and I wish I could give credit. I don't remember, but the Sirianni special.
I'm going to go Houston special. But really the whole drive, and we talked about this after the game. I just thought the play calling in that whole drive was shaky. I didn't like it. Yeah. They were sloppy and so they were as poorly executed. But I can't blame training camp for that.
Yeah,
you can't selectively pick four snaps and say, you know, that was really crappy. So it's because of camp.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's not like they didn't score because of a lack of toughness. Didn't score because the plays stunk. And, you know, in the post-game pod, I hadn't had a chance to go back and watch those plays yet, so I was going off memory. I went back and watched. You know what the thing that really irritated me about them was? There were no safety valves on a lot of those plays. It was like the play, especially the Sirianni special. There, you know, if Hurst is covered, there's nothing, there's nowhere else to go with the ball. So you have the, you just can't have one read plays in that area of the field and expect to score. And the Ertz one, if that was the play design, if that went to plan, he was the only guy in that area. So that was what bothered me about it, was you want to have options down there. And I didn't think they had good options.
Who's this team's best goal line runner?
Boston Scott.
Boston Scott. I thought he should have got at least one of those carries. And, you know, that's something that I think Doug understood. And, you know, Nick hasn't seen. I mean, he wasn't here. He doesn't know. But Boston Scott's one of the best goal line runners in the league. I mean, he's low. He's got the low center of gravity. He's got great vision. He really sees the field well. I would have given him the ball instead of, you know, I'm a huge Miles Sanders fan, but give him the ball on that. I guess it was second down. He gets in there. He gets in. He always scores from the one. He's like the opposite of Josh Adams, who never scored from one. He was like 0 for
11. And it's funny because you think of a guy who's like bigger. And I heard some people like clamoring for Jordan Howard, who's on the practice squad. But yeah, I mean, Boston has proven himself to be a pretty good goal line back.
I remember Andy Reid very early having a conversation after practice one day about goal line running. And he's like, everybody thinks you need some. And the conversation was about Westbrook. And he said, everybody thinks you need some big, you know, strong, powerful. He said, no, you need a guy with great vision, who's low to the ground, who sees the field. And Westbrook, you know, is not a textbook, you know, case of a goal line. He's not a big guy, obviously, but he was a great goal line runner because he was so elusive and shifty. And he saw the way the defense was evolving. And Boston Scott, I think, has some of those qualities too. It's kind of like the Ron Dane thing. Like everyone thought Ron Dane would be this, like, you know, this goal line, this tough short yardage goal line. That's not who he was. Just because he was a big guy, he was actually better on first down, like first and 10 from the 20. He was also Meet a Champions discus winner, by the way, for Overbrook. Just in case you were wondering, Dave, I thought you might be wondering. Ron Dane was the state record holder in the discus, still is. Long story short, Boston Scott, I would like to see him involved there. I don't think he's played an offensive snap yet.
He has not. Yeah, right. They've gone all Gainwell and all Sanders all the time. All right, next one from George. With BG down for the season and not getting any younger, do you think there's a chance they'll package Ertz for a standout defensive end or make that a draft priority?
Well, I mean, they're not trading Ertz. I mean, obviously, he's going to be a free agent, and they're not trading Ertz, but I do think draft, it's certainly going to be up there, an edge rusher. I mean, Barnett was 5 years ago now, you know, five drafts ago. So it's definitely going to be high top of the list.
Yeah, four picks in the first two rounds. I'd almost be shocked if there's not an edge player in there. I really thought that was a possibility this year. And then they used a third-round pick on Milton Williams, who in a way fills that and in a way doesn't. But yeah, based on what we know about their history, it's been a while actually since they've drafted an end that high. I mean, obviously Barnett in 17, that was 5 years ago. So I could see them drafting one pretty early in this draft.
They have a really good history drafting in the first round at that position. John Harris, Marcus Smith, you know, these guys have done really well.
I mean, they're going back to the well though. It's not like they're looking at that now while we drafted John Harris.
No, I understand. I'm just saying, no, don't have a great track record. And Derek Barnett, honestly, I mean, he's not in that category, but it's not a great pick. Not looking like a great pick right now.
It's been an okay pick.
At Nissan, we just made your choice for a new car an easier one than ever with our most exciting and fuel-efficient lineup. Choice is yours. Now get great offers across our full line. Shop your local Nissan store today at NissanUSA.com.
All right, Ruby, we have a couple more questions here, and then we'll talk about the Cowboys just briefly. This is the most important draft question we got from Matt Kuhn. When's the next animal draft?
Well, that's usually something, that kind of thing we, you know, when there's nothing going on, it's like it's June, OTAs and draft are in the rearview mirror. We still got like another month and a half before the training camp.
We should explain this because this is a throwback.
Everyone knows.
I think the guys who have been with us, the guys and girls who have been with us for a long time know about our annual draft. But if you don't, a couple years ago, I made Rube sit down for a draft of animals to play football. So I think like a gorilla was the first overall pick. Rube picked a dolphin to play quarterback, which I still, I mean, he's out of the water. I don't get it.
Is a gorilla as a lineman any more like realistic than a dolphin as a quarterback? A dolphin that's fast and quick and smooth and intelligent?
Yeah, the gorilla can live outside of the water.
Neither of them can play football, Dave. A dolphin has as much
chance. A gorilla has a better shot of playing football than a dolphin.
This is not true.
Absolutely true. The dolphin would just flop on the turf. It doesn't make any sense.
We never said the game was going to be like out of the water.
It's a football game.
Well, maybe it's like SpongeBob football game. Where SpongeBob live?
On a pineapple under the sea. Josh Yerlab says, another stupid penalty by Derek Barnett. I hope those snaps between Sweat and him flip. I do not want Barnett on this team going forward. Not a question, but fair enough. We do want to talk about this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's really a problem. And refs are looking for him. And it's just stupidity. It's just like, what are you thinking? And he does it over. He's in his fifth year now. He should know better. And he obviously doesn't. He single-handedly turned what would have been a third and
15.
Third and 15 on the 27 into a first and 10 on the 42.
42.
Just by being stupid.
Yeah. And it crushed them. Then the 49ers took another minute off the clock. They added another field goal. And based on the way the Eagles finished that game, they might have had a shot to get back in it, if not for that stupid play. And we always go back and forth on Barnett. And I defend him for the most part because I just think he's better than people give him credit for. But this is one area where there's no defense of it. It's just idiotic. You can't have a play like that. And it's funny to me because Nick Sirianni talked about, you know, clean slates here when I come in. And I get that, but he doesn't have a clean slate in the league because he's never going to get the benefit of the doubt. He's not.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's frustrating to watch someone make a stupid play like that. All right. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do us a favor, rate and subscribe wherever you get your pods. If you're watching on YouTube, please click like and subscribe there. That's it. We'll be back on Thursday with Ray Dinger to preview the Cowboys game. For Rube, I'm Dave. We'll talk to you soon.